Welcome to the Fuller Money Audio Commentary. This is David Fuller on Friday, the 25th of June, recording at 9:13 p.m. British Summer Time. Now, since this is Friday, this is the big picture outlook for the global economy and markets. But first, a quick look at the highlights on the week. Global stock markets, well, the tone was set on Monday when Wall Street had the downside key day reversals for the NASDAQ. And also the S&P 500 index. And we have seen a decline on the street pretty much all week, except for today. Wall Street had been down close to 1%, but then rebounded here to close with modest gains. The S&P was up a quarter of 1%, 3 points. Taking it back up to 1076.76. The European stock markets moved pretty much in line with Wall Street. Asian stock markets, for the most part, just sort of paused near their highs, but there was a little bit of additional softening in here today. I'm talking about the Asian developing country stock markets. Now, long-dated government bond prices were very strong. In other words, yields were coming down pretty much throughout the week as equity prices softened. The U.S. dollar was very much in retreat, and that continued here today. Gold had a downside key day reversal on Monday in U.S. dollars. But we didn't get much follow through. It came a little lower on an intraday basis over the next 2 days, but then picked up yesterday and again in here today. And gold bullion is trading after hours at $1,255 as I speak. The other precious metals had also steadied, notably silver, which is back up above $19, back up to 19 and nearly 10 cents. And what else to mention? The copper market, that's a good recovery here, up to $3 and bigger, yeah, $3.10. And crude oil also rebounded here today. It had been softer for most of the week, but crude is trading right now, or closed today, at 79.07. So that's a decent gain. Sugar has been strong. Coffee has been strong among the soft commodities. Okay, so what's going on here generally? Well, as far as stock markets are concerned, I think most of the action that we've seen over the last several months could be described as a ranging consolidation of the terrific gains that we saw last year. Adding to the ranging and some corrective activity has been the various concerns, among which the most serious economically has been the sovereign debt problems that we've seen in Europe. Now, that's a problem that's not over. It's not going to go away anytime soon, but it is pretty well reflected by market prices, and it appears to be contained for the time being. Therefore, it's having less of an impact on world markets than might otherwise be the case. There is some concern that the U.S. Economy faces a double-dip recession. I think that's an outside risk myself. There is concern over the fact that the European economy is faced with very much of a deflationary debt reduction retrenchment, as is the UK economy overall. The Asian economies, Japan excepted, which is more like the Western economies in terms of the pressures it faces, too much debt, not enough growth, deflationary pressures, in other words. But the developing, progressing country, Asian economies, face very different problems. First, they have high savings. They also have budget surpluses for the most part. And they have strong growth for the most part, and that's causing some inflationary pressures. China has moved to allow some additional easing of its currency, and to allow it to, I should rephrase that, it has lessened the peg against the US dollar, linked it more to a basket of currencies, allowing the yuan or renminbi to firm in here. And that's partly in response to the inflationary pressures that China is experiencing overall. India, another Fuller Money favorite, has been experiencing inflationary pressures, but a lot of that was held over from last year due to the poor monsoon that occurred last year. India had its worst drought in 37 years as the monsoon disappointed. But the early indications, and the monsoon period runs from June to September, the early indications are really quite favorable for the monsoon. So India is expecting that food price inflation to come down over the next year. But it has also needed to free up some subsidized prices, and it's done this with petrol, and it's done this with kerosene very recently. And that will add somewhat to inflationary pressure. So very different pictures overall. The growth engines for the world are clearly China, India, and the rest of the Asian region. The commodity resources exporting countries are also doing quite well. And generally, these are the Fuller Money themes that we've been favoring for really a very long time, and that remains true today. So, what are we likely to see for stock markets? Well, I wouldn't be at all surprised to see further ranging activity, partly because, well, when stock markets rallied up to the higher side of their ranges, led by the Asian markets recently, with Indonesia remaining to the fore, but with company, with Thailand, with Malaysia, with the Philippines, with India. While that was going on, Wall Street had ended its 2 week or so rally and was beginning to soften again this week. So at a time when the lead markets, that Asian group that I mentioned, were susceptible to some profit-taking and consolidation of their strong, albeit range-bound gains, in other words, rallies back up towards the higher side of those ranges, Wall Street has been weaker, and that's had a negative leash effect on the other stock market. So a little bit more sideways ranging for a few weeks, possibly months, would not be all that surprising. Now, inevitably, when you have a corrective phase and when markets have been hit with factors that I had referred to repeatedly in May and much of June as a sort of a triple waterfall, even a quadruple waterfall, if you considered China's tightening moves to curb property speculation, people understandably become increasingly nervous and bearish of global stock markets. So there's a growing band of commentators who feel that we are going to see a Wall Street-led retreat that will be quite substantial. It's possible. If that's going to happen, the first clear technical evidence of that would be a break by the S&P 500 index beneath the 1040 level that I have mentioned repeatedly. It'd be a sustained break below that level, with other markets starting to fall sharply. It's possible, but I think that's the outside possibility overall. We may well get the 1040 tested, but are we going to get another significant correction? I think that's definitely, well, I would definitely estimate that it is less than a 50-50 possibility here. I think we're more likely to see a ranging bias, an extension of the overall ranging bias. Why am I more optimistic than the others? Well, I think sentiment tends to become more pessimistic the longer markets remain range bound or weak. The reason I'm more optimistic is because the triple waterfall factors that I have mentioned, while not resolved, they're well understood or discounted. They're already priced into the markets, in other words. Interest rates remain very low in the OECD economies. The monetary tightening that we have seen in the growth economies is not sufficient to break the back of the overall bull trends that we have seen, and therefore they continue to remain relative strength leaders. The yield curve is certainly not at a worrying level in the United States, and that's a very important consideration, I feel overall. So this, in other words, this is not the sort of environment when I would expect a really bearish outlook. Again, why are more people more bearish? Well, there's a tendency, human nature, to expect a repeat of the last significant development that you have witnessed. And it's usually downside moves that make the greatest impression on people. So there are a lot of investors who I feel are looking over their shoulders and wondering if that great bear of 2008 and early 2009 is still out there. Well, again, it's not impossible, but I doubt it overall. And I just feel that this is a lengthy consolidation phase and that it will be resolved by continued strength in stock markets against a generally benign monetary policy. In the short term, among the economic concerns are the possibility of some slowdown in the economic recovery as stimulus packages are allowed to expire, although I don't think they will all expire. But the most important factor for me is that low interest rate environment. And bear markets are usually caused by monetary squeezes. And that we are not going to get. And we're not going to get that in China either, because or India, because the inflationary pressures, I don't think, are going to justify it. Okay, so how do we actually play it in here? Well, my preference is to buy on weakness. I think most subscribers would have that preference as well. Now, you can buy on strength in momentum markets, but we don't have momentum markets right now. So to buy on easing, favoring fuller money themes. And among those fuller money themes, I think the energy side, the oil energy side, is becoming more interesting, partly because the whole sector has been hit by the BP disaster. And I think that one consequence of that, which will not be so good for the global economy, is that crude oil prices are likely to be somewhat higher than might have otherwise been the case. Or as I've put it more often than not, I feel that as a result of the BP spill in the Gulf of Mexico, that the floor price of crude oil is likely to be higher than it might have otherwise been. So I think that's in the low to mid 70 region, and that we will see upward pressure, particularly as the global economy picks up steam once again, either later this year or at some point in 2011. So, again, on the basis that some of those oil companies have come back down, that makes the sector look a little bit more attractive. I like the industrial miners very much for the long term, but they've also been hit by this super tax that Australia has proposed. Now, Australia has just dumped its prime minister for the deputy prime minister, but that's within the same party, and she's just as committed to the super tax, although saying that aspects of it are negotiable. So I wouldn't top up in that area. I'm not going to dump these good assets, and I wouldn't be at all surprised if the opposition party won in the next general election, which I think is within a year. Don't hold me to that, but I think it is within a year or so. So I will ride that out, but perhaps not increase unless the prices actually go a little lower than I expect. I've been nibbling in China. I've just mentioned the oil plays. I think also the Asian markets generally will appeal, but it's just a matter of seeing what range is lower here, as far as I'm concerned, that comes within the floor money theme category, and that's where I'm likely to be investing. Okay, what about these long-dated government bonds? Well, they've been stunning performances overall, and it doesn't appear to be over. So we may well see some even higher levels by the long-dated government bond prices, and that means somewhat lower yields. Now, this is haven buying, and that, I suppose, is understandable, but I just don't like the yields that are available on these 10-year instruments. I think they're only really for trading. And when we get a resumption of the equity bull cycle, I think we will see long-dated government bond yields rise quite sharply. Now, trying to put the timing of all this into some sort of perspective, first, that's not easy, but I would say that in the very long term, these government bond yields have to rise. How quickly that actually occurs is hard to say, but I think tend to feel that the decline in yields, the rise in bond prices, is reaching the point where it's beginning to appear overextended. But I see no technical evidence that it is over as of this stage. I certainly wouldn't be putting any long-term money into those markets at this time. Moving on to the currency markets, or just say make one last statement. I'd rather have high-yield shares, and this lull, pullback, correction in stock markets is making some of the high-yielding equities look even more attractive. Now, what about the currencies? My view during the dollar rally was that this was very much a haven play. I don't regard it as a safe haven. I just think that the dollar looked temporarily less ugly than other fiat currencies. So I've taken out the safe in my description, just call it just haven buying, and I think that's over. The chart evidence suggests to me that that's over. We've seen the greenback fall back very sharply against Asian currencies, and I think that probably sterling is overdone on the downside. I think definitely that sterling is overdone on the downside. Let me firm up that comment. One of the reasons for that, and it's something I have been saying for a number of months, that I felt that when you got a conservative-led government, that short covering and some buying of sterling would occur. Sterling's really had a huge managed devaluation since starting in 2008, and it's made sterling very competitive. There was a delayed reaction to the conservative victory because people were very uncertain about the coalition, not surprisingly. But we do have a coalition government, of course, led by the conservatives in the UK, and we've just had a tough but I think sensible budget, placing the emphasis very much on spending cuts, 80% spending cuts to 20% tax rises, and the tax rises are mostly in the area of consumption. So that strikes me as being a fairly positive balance, and I feel that the worst is over for sterling, and that it's very much a recovery candidate. I can't quite say the same about the euro at this stage, although it's taken such a battering that I don't think it's very clever to be bearish of the euro at this point of time in time. Might it eventually go back to parity against the US dollar? Well, yes, it could in the scheme of things, but I don't feel that that's a short-term prospect. I wouldn't bet on that in the in the short or medium term. And one reason for that is the US economy has shown some signs of softening in the data that's been coming out in recent weeks. I think it was not at all hard to appreciate, and as was mentioned here, that the strong dollar was the last thing the US economy actually needed. You've had the Obama administration talking about an export-led recovery. Well, that's not going to take place against the background of a strong US dollar. So I feel that dollar strength play is over, and that if I'm premature in that conclusion, that it would really take quite a sharp decline in global stock markets to push that dollar up again, but I don't think it would last. And I think that's an outside chance. So what currencies are going to do better? Well, again, I think it'll be in the fuller money favorite categories. It'll be the fuller money secular theme currencies, Asian emerging markets, and also the South American currencies. I think they could be quite steady resources currencies in general. Now, I should say something about Japan and Japan's stock market and the yen. Really, Japan has talked a lot about its need for a weaker yen, but it hasn't done anything about it, other than a little bit of jawboning that I just mentioned. I think that Japan really does need a weaker currency, but the market isn't going to necessarily deliver that because the Japanese need it and want it. They're going to have to increase the supply of yen in circulation, and they haven't done enough of that. So my feeling is that until that happens, that any kind of sustainable relative strength of the Japanese stock market is very much on hold. So that's of less interest to me in this environment. And again, I think Owen and I have emphasized all along that the yen was the key to a recovery in the Japanese stock market, and the yen's just too strong here right now. I think that the yen will weaken because I think that Japan will, faced with evidence that the deflation is actually increasing, I think they will increase the supply of yen in circulation. But until they do that, and until the market realizes that they're doing that, and can see that they're doing that, I think that Japan is not an attractive stock market, and recovery postponed. Okay, moving on. What about gold? Well, in which currency? Gold has moved out of a seasonally favorable period. So that means that some of the extraordinary gains that we saw against sterling, and the euro and so many other currencies, may be over for a while, but yet gold may well strengthen further in US dollars. And overall, I think there are several points that need to be emphasized about gold. I think I'm correct in this, but I haven't got the chart under my nose, that it's closed higher every year over the last decade. And that certainly very much conf if it hasn't done that, it's done it 8 or 9 out of those years. And I think that certainly confirms the secular bull market that Owen and I have been talking about for those same that same number of years. I see no evidence that the secular bull market is over. If anything, all the quantitative easing, printing of money that we've seen has only increased the bullish potential for gold bullion. I don't expect any great sudden rush to the upside here. I think, I don't think that would be that healthy. I think what is healthy is that the medium-term recoveries to the upside, some lengthy pauses and consolidations within the overall upward trend, then gold pushing through to new high ground, usually in that period between the fourth quarter of the year and the first quarter of the new year, next year. That type of action is likely to be repeated more often than not. In other words, gold is going to get to some of those higher levels that people have been talking about, not least the inflation-adjusted levels. It's going to get there in its own due time. And therefore, I think long-term investors who are holding gold bullion, you've still got the performance on your side. Gold has, I believe, the best 10-year gain of any major asset class. I think also we can say that gold has shown relative strength on the downside during the big global shakeouts that have occurred, such as occurred in 2000 and 2008. So, as far as I'm concerned, this is still very much of a hold. The trading is always a little bit more tricky, but a mantra of Owen's and mine at Fuller Money is don't pay up for commodities. They're best bought following setbacks when the short-term indicators become oversold and they start to lose downside momentum. That also applies to most other commodity markets, which I think are in overall secular bullish territory. That would include crude oil, where I feel the fundamentals for crude have actually improved as a consequence of less offshore drilling, at least for the medium term. And industrial metals, well, it's an incredibly volatile sector, but I don't see any recession anytime soon in the Asian progressing markets, and therefore the consumption's likely to remain high, and that will be good for the commodity producers, certainly keeping their economies not only out of recession but growing at quite a respectable rate. We have slow growth certainly in the OECD countries, but are they going to fall into deep, severe recessions? Some will, some won't. Greece, Spain, Italy, perhaps Ireland. The UK is likely to be a slow growth area for a while. The USA, slow growth area. So is Japan. But are we going to see a horrendous meltdown such as we saw in the fourth quarter of 2008 and the first quarter of 2009? I don't think so. And I think that really, as interest rates stay low in those countries, and as the debt problems are hopefully reined in a bit further, we may well see growth start to pick up again. I wouldn't hold my breath on that, but that would be my longer term forecast. Now, I was talking about the industrial metals, and so I think that the overall background isn't that bad for the sector. And I think the companies are smart enough to rein in on production when prices do soften. And therefore, when we get big setbacks in any of these industrial commodity markets, I think those are buying opportunities. The agricultural commodities, it really depends far more on supply than anything else. It can be quite volatile. Demand is edging up for the most part, recessions aside, but the supply is the big variable, and that's usually weather related. So we need to take that off the charts overall. What we can say right now is that we do not have much evidence of food inflation as far as the U.S. agricultural prices are concerned, and that's good news overall for the global economy. And I think I've gone on long enough, so I'll wrap it up now and wish you an excellent weekend of, well, sports watching, enjoying the sunshine, meeting with family, dining out. I intend to do all those things, and wish you all the best.